By the time the average American child reaches 14, he will have witnessed the violent death of over 13,000 human beings. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing facts about blood on the screen. Hello, this is Joe Cruz on the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. Let me ask you a question today. How much programming on today's television meets the Bible test for Christian viewing? You know, almost every Christian family owns a TV set, but what kind of programs do they look at? Because there are occasional programs which meet the Bible test of truth and purity, it's easy to succumb to the argument that the set will be used only as an educational tool for the family. Solemn resolutions are usually made concerning the high quality of program that will be approved for viewing. But let's be honest and truthful, friends. For how long do those restrictive regulations continue to govern the television set? Policing becomes almost impossible because of the borderline nature of many programs. Uncertainty over where to draw a line and whether a few words of profanity disqualify an hour-long documentary and other equally perplexing decisions soon become too tedious to tolerate. The door is opened wider and wider, and the discriminative sense accommodates to the increasing flow of below-standard pictures and scenes. It's easy to justify a little more loose language because of the scattered use of expletives by popular network news reporters. Many of the advertising commercials are also laced with innuendos which belittle the Christian moral standards. It's becoming more difficult to believe that even the most careful selective viewing will not also produce a spiritual desensitivity. Snatches and phrases of gutter talk creep into some of the most highly touted educational shows. Many argue that we must learn to live with this kind of language because it surrounds us all the time. Now, it's true that we often overhear the vulgarities of the world around us. But should we deliberately expose ourselves to that which we could avoid? The truth is that most of us face severe struggles in turning away from the enticing scenes of evil that we can't avoid even while walking down the street. There's enough temptation to occupy all of our time and effort without bringing a deliberate source of temptation right into the living room. What many fail to understand is that there can be sin in a look. If somebody had come up behind Mother Eve in the Garden of Eden and asked her what she was doing in front of that forbidden tree, she probably would have answered, "I'm just looking." But those looks of Eve led into all the multiplied sorrows and eventual deaths of billions of human beings over six tragic millenniums. King David awoke from an afternoon nap and quite by chance saw his neighbor's beautiful wife taking a bath on her Mediterranean roof garden. Now, it's more than likely if someone had asked David what he was doing, he would have answered, "Just looking." But those looks led to adultery and murder, sins which influenced a nation to forget God. The results of his immorality with Bathsheba so marked the family of David that four of his own children were taken from him by tragedy or apostasy. How bitterly he later lamented the scarring consequences of his innocent looking. The indelible influence of mental patterns cannot be overemphasized. By beholding, we become changed. Thoughts are produced by what a person sees. In Proverbs 23:7, "For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he." Now, this brings us to one of the most awesome reasons that television can be detrimental to the Christian life. It's based upon the principle of vicarious or mental participation in sin. Jesus declared, "Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, Thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath already committed adultery with her in his heart." Matthew 5:27-28. Now please take note that the mind is capable of creating such realistic mental pictures that people actually become involved in the imaginary scenes. The participation is so real that Jesus said we're held accountable for what we permit our minds to dwell upon, just as though we were going through the physical act itself. Since the brain is the decision center for the body, every act performed must first be conceived in the mind before it can be translated into action. The brain, through the vast nerve communication system, sends the message for hands, feet, or other physical organs to go into action. This, by the way, is the precise point of the strongest temptation. Harboring the mental picture until it transmits the order for the body to act is so presumptuous and so debilitating to the will that few people are able to turn back from obeying that order. The Christian's only sure protection from sin is to reject the thought or imagination of evil which Satan seeks to impose on the mind. Once the evil deed has been harbored and pondered, even though only as a thought, the incredible intimate relationship of mind and body begins to produce physical reactions. With the speed of electricity, the brain sends out the message alerting the entire body to the contemplated action. Now the mind and body unite in bringing pressure for the person to perform the act. But let's suppose that it's impossible for the person to carry out the physical indulgence prompted by the mind. Perhaps a lustful attitude has been produced in the thoughts, but there's no one with whom to participate in the act of sin. Or, if the person is a Christian, he might have such strong inhibitions against the contemplated act that he'll resist carrying out the impulses of the mind. In this case, the sin exists only in the imagination. But such is the power of thought that in God's sight, the vicarious mental performance of the sin is counted as serious as a physical indulgence itself. But now let's apply this principle to the watching of TV. Nowhere do we see a more vivid demonstration of vicarious participation. Even though the viewer may be mature enough to know that the scene is only a fabricated pretend situation, yet he becomes as emotionally involved in the picture as if he were actually living out the experience. The heart pounds with fright, the eyes fill with tears, and the viewer is mentally projecting himself into the scene. Whether fighting and shooting his way out of a desperate situation, suffering the trauma of incurable disease, or yielding to the excitement of a provocative bedroom scene, the viewer is caught up in the plot, taking part by proxy in the adventures of the hero or heroine. Jesus said that this kind of participation is just as wrong as the actual physical involvement. Now try to imagine the fantastic strategy of Satan in his use of the television media. It staggers the mind even to think about it. Here is a situation in which the devil inspires one act of simulated sin, for example, an artificial make-believe portrayal of adultery. But through his manipulation of the emotions, Satan can turn that one acted out sin into a million real sins of adultery because a million people will project themselves into the picture. And in their minds, it is not make-believe. It is so real that even their bodies react. The emotions of lust and fear so fully obsess the beholder that even though they can't take part physically in the sin, their minds and wills are affected in exactly the same way as if they were taking part. And more serious still, God holds them just as guilty as if they had done it personally. Now think of this. What a clever, diabolical way to turn people into thieves, murderers, and adulterers. Satan only has to work with the scriptwriters and actors to produce the most appealing, realistic, and emotional plots. From that point, the natural laws of the mind take over, and the viewers become emotional captives of whatever they allow themselves to look at. One day they may be living out the experience of shoplifting, the next day of murder, and later of fornication or adultery. To the actors on the screen, it's preposterous pretense, but to the viewers, it is momentarily at least an opportunity to do all the exciting things that God and society forbid without having to face the consequences of doing them. But do we have to face the consequences, friends? Not physically, perhaps. But the moral responsibility for those vicarious deeds every person will have to face in the judgment. For those who have not confessed and forsaken those sins, what a terrible account must be rendered for the prostitution of the sacred powers of mind and body. Surely this principle of sin by substitution explains why the Bible speaks so strongly on the subject of the five senses. Jesus made it clear that no effort should be spared in safeguarding the avenues of the mind. Immediately after his comment about looking on a woman in lust, he said, "And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out, and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell." Matthew 5:29. Now this text has often been misconstrued, friends. Jesus was not talking about the physical eye. A person could lose one eye and still be evil and perverse. No, he was talking about the things on which the eye focuses. If the eye is looking at something which is liable to lead the eye or the person into sin, Jesus was saying that the most drastic action should be taken to put those scenes out of view. In other words, don't continue to look at something which is spiritually offensive and provocative. Doing so could lead into sin and cause the person to be cast into hell. What a dramatic example of the dangers of just looking at wrong pictures. Translated into a modern setting, Christ was saying that if we have a television set in the home which we can't control, it's better to cast it out of the house under the junk pile than to be led into sin by its influence. Better to lead a so-called one-eyed existence without television than to lose our soul by defiling sinful thoughts created by television. The command of Christ was to pluck it out, to turn away from what the eye is looking at. The choice is ours to make. The only way to be pure-minded is to look at, listen to, and speak only the things that are pure. Paul said, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." Philippians 4:8. The secret of being pure, honest, and virtuous is to think that way. And the way we think is determined by what we see, hear, and speak. David said, "I will set no wicked thing before my eyes." Psalms 101:3. Now to these physical factors, we could add pages of shocking statistics on the effect of TV violence on the mind and morals, upon crime incitations and scholastic achievement. These are well known and oft repeated. No one will ever know exactly how many blueprints for crime have been carefully detailed in a TV story and later put into operation by an assortment of muggers, thieves, and rapists. Society today is in the grip of a growing complacency toward violence and human suffering. Constant television exposure to cruelty and inhumanity has created a climate of amazing indifference to our fellow men. People do not want to get involved. Usually they pass heedlessly by the victim of attack. Public reaction to natural calamities such as earthquakes and floods and famines is almost ho-hum. The 6 o'clock p.m. newscast pictures of thousands dying in South America or Turkey make even less impression than last night's late movie scenes, because they become so accustomed to them, you see, friends, and by that acted violence. Well, our time has slipped away from us. I wish we had more time, but at least you can write and get the full amount of material that we were presenting on this broadcast today. By the way, be sure to give the call letters of the station that you're listening to also when you write. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.